This is David Kaplan on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Cap and Company podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
From State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is WMVP Chicago, ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
To Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I'm Chris Black along with Jesse Rogers sitting in for David Kaplan today. Lots to discuss. We'll talk some football with you. Also, I hear that Jesse has a hot take on 90s basketball when looking at today's basketball. So we'll get into that as well. But Jesse, let's start first off with your column that was posted yesterday on ESPN.com. The headline: some MLB players hoping for loosening of restrictions in the health proposal to get this season back going. You name some names. You also have some sources that are not named. A lot of good information here on baseball and what the players want to get this accomplished.
Yeah, first of all, good morning, Chris. And it is interesting because, like I said in the tease at about 8:50 there, It depends which player you talk to. Now, I talked to several that want to ease the restrictions, but I bet I could find a few. And before these health proposals came out, most of them were talking about making sure that they would be safe. But the people in this column I wrote are saying maybe it's a little too much. And the theory is this, and I think this could apply to any sport that's trying to restart. Their thinking is the following. If we are going to be tested as often as they say, maybe even every day before we enter the ballpark, and especially if we're going to get the results pretty quick, or once they start testing and the results are coming in, even if it's a day later, but you know, you start a couple days before you go in and you keep getting tested as you start to get back in the stadium. If they're all being tested and all coming out negative once they go in the ballpark, why do we have to have such strict protocols? Everybody in that ballpark is in our negative bubble, so to speak. Now, they're not talking about necessarily all the stadium workers, but remember, they're going to have distance from them anyway, and I would expect, you know, some sort of testing for those people as well. But in terms of using the equipment in there, using same baseballs, even a high five, if everyone's negative, why can't we do it? That's their thinking, and I think there's a lot of that around the league, not just players, but personnel within team facilities. It just almost feels like I said before, jumping through too many hoops to get this thing done if we have to follow every single protocol. Now, the other side of that is what I wrote in the column from a scientist out of Princeton, basically saying, okay, the quicker the tests and some of the tests that are on the market as is, you might end up with some false negatives. And if one person gets through that is actually actually positive for the coronavirus, then watch out. If we're going to loosen those restrictions, the whole team's going to get it, and we're in big, big trouble. So it's really being safer rather than sorry. But I think in the end product, if they come to an agreement, there will be some restrictions loosened. That's why it's a negotiation.
Right. And all along, it seems to me the best case for all this is more testing, right? So the more available tests, the more frequent you can be tested, that's going to get the leagues in a spot where they can actually come back. Now, you mentioned it with jumping through hoops. I think it's important to kind of point that out because it does seem on the surface level. You explained it right there, and it makes perfect sense. I can't disagree with anything that you're reporting on or anything that the players have concerns about. But when you see it on the surface level, isn't it interesting that players were then saying last week that they were afraid of their safety, but then they're coming out this week saying, too much, too many restrictions for me. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with this. It's like, don't the players all have to get on the same page if they're going to say they don't want to play because it's not safe, or if they will be willing to play, but it's too many restrictions? Don't you see a difference there?
Well, yes, absolutely. And that's why I point out it depends on who you talk to and what they stress. Even within that column, there were other people I talked to, an agent who was mostly concerned with his young clients not doing the wrong thing away from the ballpark, you know, going out to nightclubs that are packed,
yeah,
and spreading it that way. I mean, they're supposed to be somewhat sequestered in their hotels. The agent thought that would be the harder thing, but that's an agent. He doesn't go to the ballpark every day and have the routines that these players have. So, again, everyone has a different take. You say get on the same page, it's harder to get 1,200 players on the same page compared to 30 owners. But what has to happen is the leadership of the players' union has to sort of get everybody on the same page one way or another. And I'm just talking about the health protocols, but I'm really talking about the next fight, which is the economics of this thing. They haven't even started that discussion. So that's been one issue with leadership, I think, over the last few years. They've not necessarily been on the same page. Again, 1,200 players, they're all going to have their own opinions. But when you get to the negotiating table, you sort of need one voice or a couple voices, so to speak, you know, of a couple executive board members. But basically one voice in terms of what they believe in and what they're going to fight for. And I'm not sure they're there yet for the health proposal, and they're definitely not there yet for the economic side of it.
So what's Tony Clark doing? Because Ian Happ was on Golic and Wingo 20 minutes ago, and he said after they originally agreed that he has not seen anything. So there have been no proposals sent to the players per Ian Happ, and he just said that here on ESPN 1000. So, like, what – I guess my concern over this whole thing is, like, time is slipping away for baseball to get this up and running. And my fear is if the governments say sports can return, as long as you are safe, here are the guidelines, sports can return in all 50 states. Because we do have some of the big players saying that that is possible in the near future. California, New York, Texas, right? I'm sure Illinois won't be too far behind those three, especially New York and California, because those are two of the hot spots of the pandemic, right? So if Illinois is not too far behind, and you look at the Cubs and the White Sox, if Major League Baseball is not ready to go, and the governments are saying you can return to play, what is this really about? I don't, like, to me as a fan, and if we get to a point where live sports are allowed to return, but baseball isn't ready to go, I think that's a major miss on baseball. And Jesse, this whole conversation is basically about the next, like, 7 to 10 days. Because unless they get something agreed upon and get things in motion and put these guys in bubbles to kind of head towards the positive testing and removing individuals from people who need to be tested every single day. Like, the whole thing, the logistics of it, doesn't make sense if you continue to wait. Aren't they running out of time?
It's a colossal blunder if that's the case. And what I'm getting at is who would have thought the country would be ahead of the sport,
right?
So to speak. That is, we are approaching that. You're right, and that would be just terrible. I always thought the country would end up, you know, holding the league back because it just seemed like it wasn't going in the right direction. Now maybe it is. I don't know if there's another outbreak. I'll feel differently. But anyway, in terms of what they're doing, the country is opening up. California is just, you know, okay. Baseball, you know, the governor Pritzker loosened some restrictions here. I'm with you. The clock is ticking. I mentioned the NBA earlier in the tease. I mean, think about what they have to do. But on June 1st, they're going to come out with these guidelines: 2 week, you know, return to your city quarantine, then 1 to 2 weeks of individual workouts, 2 to 3 weeks of a training camp, and then games before the end of July. I mean, that's a lot to get to just to play. Right. And then they may even start up the regular season. I don't know about you, but come on. Golden State doesn't want to. The Bulls don't want to go back into training camp to finish the regular season. Just go to the playoffs.
Are you saying Jim Boylan doesn't want to prove himself to the new regime? Boylan's not there coaching to win games at the end, the final six games?
Be smart. Now, in terms of baseball,
yeah.
I don't think they have, you know, the health proposal is there. I don't think they have an economic proposal to show the players just yet. So, I mean, look, when they get stuff, they get it to the players. I mean, it just hasn't happened yet, the big economic proposal. But the players know what the health proposals are, so I'm not sure what Happ was referring to. Now, you're right. There's been nothing agreed upon since the end of March. They need to start agreeing on some things, starting with those health protocols, which need to be revamped a little bit, at least according to a lot of people I talk to.
312-332-3776. If you want to join us this morning, give us a call. We're talking about baseball. Will baseball be played this summer? Black and Rogers in for David Kaplan right here on ESPN 1000.
Is it worth it? That's what I like to, whether it be you're an NBA fan or a Major League base, is it worth it? Now, on one hand, it's easy for a fan to say, yeah, it's worth it. I don't have to jump through the hoops. But is it going to destroy the competition of it all? I mean, to this baseball without fans, without anything that we're used to, other than obviously the pitching and the hitting, you know what I mean? Like, there's no camaraderie. There's no celebrating. There's nothing, you know. And the game is going to suffer without the recovery stuff. That was in my column. You can't use the hydrotherapy, the cryotherapy, any of the training room facilities. I mean, it's going to suffer. There's going to be more injuries. It's just, is it worth it? Is it worth it for the NBA to go through all those hoops and then start next season later and screw up what could be 2021, you know, the next year? So I don't know. I mean, again, you sit on your couch, what do you care if they're jumping through all these hoops? But if the competition's going to be just awful, I mean, it won't take long for people to be bored of bad baseball. It will not take long.
But Jess, people are watching the South Korean League. And there's no fans there. And listen, and I know you're going to say, what are the ratings or whatever? But, like, listen, I watched Darlington last night. Did you watch the NASCAR last night? NASCAR's ratings have been up.
Yeah.
I was upset that the rain came and the final 20 laps weren't there. I wanted to see more racing. So, like, listen, I get it. And especially with the NBA, I don't think it's really a problem because behind the scenes, they want to shift the season schedule anyway. So if you get to a point where now you're starting the NBA season on Christmas Day and that's just kind of the way they go from here on out, I think they would be pleased with that, where baseball's in a different bind, because the longer you wait to start this season and get a completion of this season, then you creep into the off season, and then next spring, what do you do to get the next baseball season going? But I think the major answer, is it worth it, is you have to look at all of the industries that piggyback off of live sports, because then you say, yes, it's worth it, right? Think about all the different industries that are affected by no sports at all. And if you can get these leagues up and running, I think that is a major bonus when we look at this heading forward. I get it. The person on their couch, it doesn't really affect me that Ian Happ has to go and get ready and sit in a bubble and prepare himself to play. But I think all the different levels of industry that come off of baseball, I think that's important to get that up and running.
No, I think you're right. Obviously, I think you're right. But remember, it is many less industries because there's no fans in the stands. I mean, the bars around Wrigley, the concession workers inside Wrigley.
Restaurants are going to be able to have people outside in the next couple of weeks here. So, like,
that's true.
That, but Wrigleyville, I get it won't be as packed as it used to be. It won't be hopping until 2 a.m. with people slammed in Red Ivy. I know Red Ivy doesn't exist anymore, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like,
is better than nothing. Right. That's the bottom line. It just feels just weird, you know? Just basketball at the end of July, the regular season. Come on.
I'm a traditionalist in it. I love having the finals in early June, and that's where it is. But listen, the league wants to stop going against football. That's their idea. They want, when football's over, the NBA to start. So we'll take a look at that as we kind of go forward. Chris Bleck, Jesse Rogers, sitting in for David Kaplan. Jesse, I have to ask you about the finances of the Chicago Cubs coming up. Is that okay?
Sure, why not?
All right, let's talk Cubs baseball.
I don't know if I'll have answers, but let's do it.
Well, we'll figure it out. I mean, I think the Cubs were having money issues before the pandemic, right?
Right. All right. Yeah, that's what it seemed like if you look at their off seasons.
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Cap and Company. See what Sparkles is up to on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today. Cap and Company.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Couple years for the Chicago Cubs in the offseason, Jesse. We've heard this story a couple of different times that there was no more budget for the baseball operations side of things for the Chicago Cubs. And this was before we entered a pandemic. So I wonder, as we kind of go into this and we see what takes place on the other end, like, what are the financials of the Chicago Cubs? What's the situation they're sitting in? Because Chris Bryant will be a free agent. Javi Baez, right, at some point needs a new deal. Wilson Contreras needs a new deal, right? All these young, talented players will need new paper. What's the situation for the Cubs going forward?
I mean, if I had that answer, I'd be working for the team or the league. I mean, I don't think many people know exactly what it's going to be like a winter or two from now. Now, all those guys are up not this winter, but the next one.
Right.
So that's good. They have a little time to sort of get their bearings. I don't know. I've talked to people, and no one seems to exactly know. They're sort of it's almost like what our country was dealing with. Like, you have to deal with the here and now, right? And then figure out the long-term ramifications. I think the country and the sport are in similar situations. We're both are trying to figure out how to get past today, and we'll figure out what the economy is as a country in 6 months, and then we have to figure out what baseball is going to look like. But it's not going to be good, and it's not going to be good on a couple fronts. I don't think the players should give much right now. They're under contract, salaried union employees. I've talked about this on the air. But going forward, they're going to have to understand that this is affecting the future as it is the present. So, right. I mean, Javi Baez is a great, great example, Chris. You bring him up. They were getting closer to a deal for him.
Yeah.
When baseball shut down. I mean, they were possibly days away from a deal with Javi Baez. That I'm not 100% sure it was going to happen, but there was that potential. They were days away. Think about restarting that negotiation. Epstein, Ricketts, they may change the terms based on what's happened.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
And it's going to hurt the player.
Right. Now maybe they won't, though. Maybe they won't with Javi because they were that close. All right, Javi's going to get his. But certainly as we go into the next round of negotiations with the next player, because that was at that was 95% done, let's pretend. You know, maybe they take care of. But the next guy and the next guy after that, it's I would assume it's going to be a whole new world, right? It just has to be. It has to be based on the lost revenue and a new CBA coming up. So, yeah, but it's all relative. Whatever the Cubs can't spend, I'm sure the Reds can't spend. And these other teams are, even the Yankees, everyone's going to take a hit, and the players are included in that.
Well, you say the Yankees and the Red Sox, but those teams didn't start a brand new television network this offseason. Right, like the Cubs haven't
seen the profits. Of
well, that's my point. You know, have they cashed in on that yet?
No, they
haven't. Right, and so they have that. The last two off seasons and two off seasons ago, when Tom Ricketts said that there was no more budget, even though many pointed to the moves that the Cubs should have made to improve the ball club. To me, it's a whole bunch of things that kind of line up where this team. Like, I was just trying to think of this. Like, how much debt do the Chicago Cubs have?
And how
they have a lot of debt, right? And there's no cash flow right now. Nothing's coming in.
Nope.
And there is the chance, right, that we don't have baseball. I don't know how large of that chance is for this summer, but there is a percentile that would suggest that they don't agree and we don't have baseball at all, right?
Right.
Okay, so you get no money for 1 year at all. Nothing is salvageable from this season because of the pandemic. Then you add in the fact that the buildings they own around Wrigley, those businesses are not operational right now, right? Nothing's cooking in the kitchen. Nothing's going on. So, like, to me, I think people point to, like, the Athletics, the Rays, some of the bottom feeders who don't make a lot of money, but yet they don't really spend it because they can't afford to. And they look at teams like the Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs, Dodgers as teams that, oh, they'll be fine because they're cash cows. But how much of that is leveraged based on the amount of debt that the Cubs have? Like,
well,
that's where I look at this whole situation and going forward and like, not saying to be an alarmist, but could the Cubs be sitting in a worse position than some of the top teams in Major League Baseball going forward after the pandemic?
Well, I'll play the other side of it for a moment. Remind everybody, even though they stopped spending, their payrolls were still pretty high. I mean, high enough where they were battling the tax, you know. So they were top 4 or 5 payroll, and they probably were going to be close to that this year as well. I think Ricketts says they were 1 or 2 last year. I think it was 2. So you gotta say that part of it as well. The bottom line is they're going to be better than those bottom feeders, but they may not be battling the Yankees and the Dodgers and some of the Angels for their payroll moving forward. So this is a tough topic because no one knows how it's going to play out, and no one knows exactly when the Cubs were going to start spending again. There's a lot of gray area unknown there. And this is just adding to it. So I don't know. I wish I knew. I don't think anybody knows. I'm not sure Theo knows exactly. I mean, their 3-year, 5-year models are all out the window now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then did you see Jeff Passan yesterday? He tweets out, Chicago Cub employees will be taking pay cuts, have been guaranteed employment through at least the end of June. Sources familiar with the employee called today I told ESPN. Yeah. Majority of the cuts will be for 15% or less. Hope is that baseball is back in June.
Well, that's expected. All teams are going to do some form of that. Remember, though, I don't believe he mentioned any furloughs. Other teams are furloughing some employees or even firing them, cutting them. So just a reduction in pay, that's actually a decent sign. You got to give them credit for not furloughing people. But every team's going to have some form of that moving forward. I think people were guaranteed through May, but June and beyond is not so much guaranteed. Now,
yeah, right.
Baseball returns, that's a different story.
Well, it says the hope is that baseball's back in June. We just laid out in the first 20 minutes of the show, baseball's not coming back in June.
Not games, at least. Yeah, well, not
right,
games.
Right. So they need to find a way to get things up and running. And that then full circle goes back to why it's so important that the players and the owners get on the same page to accomplish something.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like I said, if the country's ahead of baseball and these governors are saying, yeah, come play, and they can't come to an agreement, that is just devastating, at least the optics of it. I think most, you know, here's the thing. What's real and what's not? We should do a segment, Chris.
Yeah,
what's real and what's not? Let's say baseball doesn't come back or the NBA doesn't come back.
Right.
People act like it's an apocalypse. Like it's devastating. It's the worst. No, if you're a baseball fan this year, you'll be a baseball fan next year. Well, could they lose a few people? Now, could they lose more if it's a fight over economics? Of course. But let's just say the country isn't ready, you know, because of the virus, for baseball to come back. Okay, so we'll wait a year. We'll just be starving for it. Again, if it's because of the economic fight, maybe you'll lose a few. But even then, are you really not sleeping at night because the players and owners are fighting? I don't think so. And we're halfway through the season anyway. If the NBA doesn't come back, you'll be an NBA fan next year. So, you know, sometimes we make these grand statements and gestures about, oh, I'll never watch again. Yes, you will. Yes, you will.
Well, it depends. I think some people, if the other leagues play and baseball doesn't, then I think your point is not going to be as valid. But you're right. If the virus doesn't allow anyone to come back, you're 100% correct. When sports return, people will come back, won't be a problem. But if everyone else is ready to go, baseball is still arguing between the players and the owners, no, people won't come back, Jesse.
I don't know.
Come on. What do you think happened in 94? There's a whole generation of people that look at what happened in 94 and say, ah, blank baseball.
All right, let's go to one extreme. Let's say that happens. They don't play because of the economics. But this offseason, somehow, Ricketts, I don't think he needs to win the lottery. Let's pretend he does win the lottery. And they go on a little bit of a spending spree, and they have a World Series contender next year.
Okay.
Do you think there's one Cub fan, or more than one, that doesn't watch because of what happened this year in a crazy, crazy year that was affected by the pandemic? I mean, I think Cub fans will be back. Now, yeah. I'm just talking Cub fans. Maybe there's some casual Kansas City Royal fans. No offense to them. Yeah, but I know Cub fans, and they are diehards, most of them. I think Cub fans return.
I was just going to say, good morning,
Randy,
Jesse. How are you?
Hey, Randy.
Yay!
What's up?
Hey, Randy's here.
Oh, Merck.
Thank you. If it comes down to money, they're not coming back. I'm just telling you.
I disagree.
They've had it.
I disagree. Half the season's over anyway. It's a screwed up year. I agree. People will be mad and angry, and that's what I'm talking about. Grand gestures, you know, statements. People will be calling up, yelling, "I'm never coming back." They'll be back next summer. I think so.
I don't know about that, Jess. I think you're giving too much faith in people just allowing baseball to continue to do this to them. They can never get it right.
They can never continue to do this. What? They haven't had a work stoppage, you know, since then.
Okay, but the problem is it always comes down to this. It's the same old story with baseball. That's the problem. It does feel that way.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, right. Like, we've done this before. I don't need to do it again. I'll continue to watch. You'll continue to watch. But I'm sure some people will say, you know what? That's all they do is complain about the money, the back and forth. The players didn't want to play. Oh, they got health restrictions. It's what they complained about. Well, too many health restrictions. Oh, not enough of the pie, but they wanted some pie. If you want pie, have some pie, Jess.
Yeah, look, I think the biggest thing for this particular fight is the fact that they did not come to that economic agreement in late March. I mean, they needed to spell it out. I'm not talking about that email that emerged. The fact that that email, I'm talking about the New York Post had this email exchange. I think people know what I'm talking about. The fact that the guy had to go back and try to clarify it alone tells us. And even if you think it was clarified within that email, but the fact that they had to go back and say, wait, are we talking again about economics when we start up, or are we not talking? You see what I'm saying? Like, that agreement should have spelled it out. And I have the agreement, you know, in my folder here, on my laptop. It does not spell it out as explicitly as it should have been. There should have been 5 pages on playing with fans and playing without fans. Here are your salaries, or here are the conditions for your salaries. Like, even if they didn't have all the information then.
Well, okay, who's to blame for that? What's the players union doing?
I think both sides.
Yeah, but they knew it was open for discussion, though. That's what that email shows.
I guess so. But they should have had it in that agreement.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let's go to Matt in Hawthorne Woods. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Matt?
What's going on, Chris?
Not too much, man. What do you think?
My take kind of is, I think there's a lot of people that aren't missing sports as much as they thought. I mean, I thought, like, holy cow, the world's coming to an end. I'm going to be missing football, missing baseball, missing NBA playoffs. But there's so many things that have kind of changed that I don't find myself missing it as much as I thought I was going to. And I'm a season ticket holder for the Bears. I'm a huge, huge Cubs fan. And I kind of like the fact that I'm not anxious over the Cubs scores every single day. And it's kind of been a nice break. And I think the people that are even less of sports fans than I am are going to realize that it's not as important as they once thought it was.
Okay. Let me respond to that. I mean, I understand baseball was the nation's pastime, right? And it's changed. So I get that baseball might have a different feel, but you cannot tell me come this fall on Saturday and Sunday, if there's nothing to watch on TV and you know what I'm getting at, you won't feel it. Come on. That is as tradition as waking up. You know what I mean? That's watching football on Saturday and Sunday is what we do in this country. And I don't know. People will miss it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Jesse. I absolutely will. And I'm missing sports now. Although I will say with what Matt was saying, I'm not bored. Are you bored?
I mean, here's the thing.
Because I found ways to occupy my time.
This is a great psychological look at things. Remember March? Remember when the shutdown happened?
And, yeah.
And for those 2 weeks in March, it felt like 2 months.
Right.
And the longer we've been in this, things have gone quicker. Like, the month of April went pretty fast, and May has really gone fast in my mind. So it's what you get used to. I think we missed it more at the end of March and early April. You being a diehard NBA fan, you must have been dying back then. I think the longer we've gone, the less we've missed it because we have found other things to fill our time. So I'm less bored now than I was a month ago. But I still believe that when the Cubs are back, when the Bears are back, we are right back to who we are or who we were. Now, maybe not everybody. You can't say everybody. But 95% are back to who we were. I could be wrong. We're in the sports business, so I'm more in tune with sports fans. You know what I mean? Diehards and stuff. But I don't think I'm wrong. I think we're back to watching, certainly football.
That's Jesse Rogers. I'm Chris Blake. In for David Kaplan here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. Jesse has some thoughts on 90s basketball compared to today's game. We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Cap and Company. Follow on Twitter at The Cap Man.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'll say this, Jesse. I'm not bored without sports, but I will say the sync with like my day is totally off. Like usually I would set up my night where like I'm done with everything by 7 o'clock. So, you know, you have to be ready to watch sports. But like now I'm sitting around, it's like 8:45 and I look at my watch. I'm like, whoa, what happened to the night? Like, you just let things bleed into the other. You don't really have a schedule to be set on. I miss the schedule regiment of sports playing a role in our lives. That's something I definitely miss.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a little different because I cover the Cubs, oh, yeah, baseball, and so my rhythm is way off. I haven't been home this much in 10 years. I covered the Blackhawks on the road, and then the Cubs. I went to basically every road game for the last 4 or 5 years, and so this has just been really weird for me. I don't know what day of the week it is.
You're supposed to be right now?
No, I stopped looking.
You're supposed to be in Pittsburgh, end of a 3-game set, Cubs and Pirates. The Cubs already won the first 2 games of the series, so you're going to give us a report later on how the Cubs are going to beat the Pirates in the final game of this series.
The thing I've thought about most during this in terms of work is, man, April and May weather is as bad as I remember, right, yeah, every year. And this was as bad as ever. We broke the May record for rain already, I guess.
Yeah.
And April was cold. And that's what I think about Wrigley Field in April and May. People that don't live here don't know. Many, many years, it really doesn't get warm until June. It's just we have no spring, and this has been no different. When it's warm, it rains. When it's sunny, it's cold, and that's so I'm sort of glad we've missed the first 2 months because it's been a bad April and May weather-wise here.
Jess, you're on the radio in Chicago. Who are you talking to? People who don't live here. You're talking to us.
I'm
we
just
live
saying.
Here. We know.
I'm talking.
Yes,
I'm talking,
we know.
Yeah.
This isn't ESPN National. Come on.
Other people are listening or you know, talk to me or whatever. I was talking to somebody, one of the other reporters from another city, and he's like, yeah, I'm outside. I'm like, yeah, we go outside once a week around here.
Yeah, right. Okay, you know? Your thoughts on the NBA. The Last Dance aired the last couple of weeks, and we've seen a lot of 90s basketball.
Yes. Now, let me preface it. I'm a little biased, and you know what I did back then. I was a sports radio producer, Mike North, his show, and we were on the road with the team a lot. We were right in the middle of everything for the 90s Bulls and basketball and all that stuff. So I'm a little biased. So I want to ask you and other younger sports fans, NBA fans, now that you've seen a little bit more intimately what it was like back then, is there any longing for that kind of basketball? And yes, there were scores like 87-75 often. Not once in a while, but often in the playoffs. I think I mentioned this story. I tweeted it out. When the Bulls were playing the Knicks, I mean, to find some offense, it was tough. And I remember tracking down big-time Knicks fan Woody Allen in the bowels of Madison Square Garden. And I had a tape recorder, and I wish I still had the tape. And I asked him, and, you know, it was one of those 87 to 80 games, or even maybe it was worse than that, in the 70s or something. And I said to him, you know, what's wrong with the Knicks? What happened tonight? And he said, and I can't do a New York accent, but he said these exact words. The Knicks like to lollygag and dawdle. They like to lollygag and dawdle.
It's pretty good, Woody Allen. Yeah.
You love the NBA.
Uh-huh.
Would anybody describe any team in the NBA today on offense as a team that likes to lollygag and dawdle? It wouldn't be a descriptor right now. But back then, those were words you would use to describe basketball. Having said that, I'm still going to ask, now that you've seen it a little bit more intimately, do you long for those days or do you like the game as is?
You know, I get your point. I personally don't, just because I understand why basketball today is so advanced when it comes to the schematics, the movement, the spacing. Why things take place the way they do is not just guys running up and down the floor hucking 3-point shots. That's not, I know that that's the way people spin it, but that's not really what's taking place. And if you watched last night on ESPN television, game 6 of the 98 finals, you'll notice the Utah Jazz basically ran one set the entire game. There's no movement. And multiple times in the first half, the Bulls were called for defensive violations because what did they say on the broadcast? Oh, they're going down to Malone, and Hornacek stepped out beyond the 3-point line. Jordan's got to watch that. And it's like, But yeah, he's got to watch that. And if the Jazz were smarter, they would use the spacing to their advantage, but they couldn't. So, like, I understand the schematics of baseball, basketball, so I get why teams do it. And the lollygagging, it's just slow. Jesse, I totally understand. I'm an NBA historian. I love the league. I love the history of the league. And I get why the 90s were slowed down. It's just a different athlete today. So, like, if you had the guys playing the possessions you played in the 90s, you would just see completely different results because these guys are used to movement. And that's what you get very little of when you're watching those games from the mid-90s, especially those Utah teams. Those Utah teams, if you want a hot take, Jess, I'll give you a take. That Utah Jazz team that went to the finals 2 years in a row, so overrated. That's garbage compared to today's basketball.
Well, look, the athletes today are so much better, so I don't want to compare that so much.
Yeah.
But two things about what you said. First of all, Utah was a little unique because it was Malone and Stockton, and that was basically it. You know, that they ran one set of offense, but that does still go to your point. I get it, but they were a little bit more unique because they just did the same thing basically every time down the court. Not every team did, because on the other side of the court was the Bulls running a pretty cool at the time triangle offense. Right? If you're a historian, you know that's a pretty cool offense. And he used it with the Lakers as well, and it worked. So it wasn't, you know, they weren't so behind the times back then compared to today. It's different sets and things now, but the triangle was pretty cool in its own way. Here's the other point. The way it was played back then, I believe, and I could be wrong, fostered the rivalry aspect so much more. Why? Obvious reasons. When you go down the lane and get hammered over and over and over again, you're going to start to not like that guy. And that was part of the whole documentary. The Bulls-Pistons, the Bulls-Knicks. There's plenty of other rivalries to talk about. Celtics-Lakers back then, that maybe to the 80s. But don't you agree that kind of basketball fostered the hate that we all like to see, that kind of rivalry? Today, it's let's all go down to Miami and be buddies and win some championships. You didn't get that back then. And I think part of it, look, they kept a guy off the goddamn dream team because they didn't like him. You know, that would probably never happen today. I might be wrong, but I don't think so.
Yeah, it depends on who that guy is. I think, to your point, the earlier generations, the pounding on each other in the lane did have something to play with that. I think also the best point you made out of that was the players getting together and moving teams. Because I think what made the rivalries easy to follow as a fan were that guys stayed in one place. We knew in the 90s, Reggie Miller was going to be on the Pacers. We knew that Michael would be on the Bulls and that Patrick would be on the Knicks. And I think what's lost a little in the last 10 to 15 years of the NBA's history is that you have so many different teams that pop up who are good based on stars deciding to then go to that team. Thus, the previous years of the rivalry have not been there in existence. Like, the fact that the Bulls had to go through the Pistons, and the Pistons were still the same Pistons when they beat them in 91, I think is valuable, right? Like, there's something to that, seeing a team multiple times in a row in multiple playoffs in a row. I think that's how you build the rivalry. Yes, you're right. The style of play led to guys disliking each other totally. But, like, you could go back to the last couple of years of the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. I don't think Chris Paul and James Harden and those players and P.J. Tucker really liked Kevin Durant and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson because they played multiple years in the playoffs against each other in matchups that meant something. I think that is the key, is the older generation totally wins this argument when you talk about guys teaming up together, right? Like, you can't argue that it's better that guys are teaming up now. It hurts the league that takes place. It's good that the Bulls knew and Bulls fans knew who their rivals are. Like, who's the biggest Bulls rival now? I get that the Bulls are no good, but
probably the Bucks.
Right. Like, if they got good, the Bulls' biggest rival would be the Bucks. That's never happened before in history. And it probably won't happen the moment Giannis leaves, right? The moment Giannis leaves and goes somewhere else, the Bucks Bulls will not be a rivalry if the Bulls get good again. And so, like, that is something that I think is valuable that I think people who only consume the NBA today miss out on. Because even a game of Bulls-Knicks in the regular season, that meant something, right? You were interested in that. That was something fun to cover.
Definitely. It was some of the best basketball I've ever seen just in terms of intensity. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It was incredible. You know, Being in New York in the Met, I understand why Jordan loved playing there. It was just, it rivaled the old stadium. That's how intense Madison Square Garden was when the Bulls and Knicks played. I mean, it just brought out the energy like you would not believe. And unfortunately for the Knicks, they lollygagged and dawdled their way to not being able to beat the Bulls. Their offense was really bad though at times. Again, those scores were pretty low. So they were the extreme in the other way. You know what I mean? Like, if I don't like some of the NBA today, there were moments where I'm like, Jesus, can you make a basket? You know what I mean? So I could see both sides of the argument. You make some good ones. I still long for those days, though.
Jesse, can you do the Woody Allen again, the impersonation?
They like the lollygag and dawdle. They really do.
Wasn't Woody Allen canceled recently?
And this was when he was in the news. I mean,
I'm aware. That's what I'm talking about. I don't think he's a favorable person to be quoting these days.
No, but this is night. Well, I'm just telling you, I interviewed him. What do you want from me? I'm not like, looking up to him.
Well, I know.
This was 1994. Yeah. You Google him in 94.
I know.
He's right in the middle of it, and he's with his wife at the time when I interviewed him. Mike Greenberg always jokes about this because the last thing I say to Woody and his now wife, I say, take care to Woody, and then I say, take care again to her. I'm like, take care. And Greeny used to always make fun of me. The second take care was for Sue Nee. But they were walking through the bowels, and I'm like, how about that game tonight? He's like, oh, they like to lollygag and dawdle. They can't shoot. They can't score. I'm like, yeah, you're right about that. And they can't beat the Bulls.
So Jesse interviewed Woody Allen back in the day. He also tried to book like one of the five best guests in the world for today's show. He didn't book him, but he actually got a response. We'll tell you about that next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Did you miss some Cap and Company? Your podcast is ready. Chicago's home for sports is on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
This hour of Cap and Company is brought to you by CBDMD. Discover the secret to everyday wellness. CBDMD. Superior CBD, superior you. Get 20% off when you enter the code WADDLE. Chris Bleck, Jesse Rogers, in for David Kaplan today here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. So Jesse was, now listen, Randy Merkin is here. Randy, earmuffs. From what I've heard, Jesse Rogers is the all-time greatest radio producer booker in the game, in history. He's Jordan. He is the guy in the biz who's the absolute best. He no longer does that because he's on the road covering the Chicago Cubs, but when he gets a chance to host radio shows, he jumps back into the radio producer booking role to try and land big guests. And I was told this morning that one of the biggest guests in the world is someone that Jesse went after, and they responded.
If I was that good, I would have gotten him.
Well, Jess, you shoot for the stars, you land on a cloud, right?
Yeah, something like that. So who besides Michael was in the documentary? Who would be as big as Michael that was in the documentary? I mean, I think if you think about it, you'll realize who I'm talking about.
Will Perdue.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a little connection to the former president. I mean, the connection was just basically here's the person to talk to get him. And so tried to get President Obama on. I mean, we've had almost everybody else on, right?
Yeah.
Did not get that, but I got a nice letter back. Thank you for reaching out. We're glad to hear you enjoyed The Last Dance and that it made our present situation a little bit more bearable. Unfortunately, due to the large volume of requests that we received, President Obama will not be able to participate. We thank you for your interest, Jesse.
Okay, so I have a couple questions about this. So what did your email say to them that they responded, we're glad you enjoyed it? Like they didn't have a producer credit on this. Why are they telling you glad you enjoyed it? What did you say?
Yeah, I basically mentioned our mutual contact. I said, so-and-so told me to get a hold of you. And we so much enjoyed President Obama in the documentary. And it's reignited so many debates from that era of Bulls teams.
Good angle. You're trying to rope Obama into some good 90s 2020 basketball combo. I see what you're doing. That there's the angle.
That's what I said. And in caps, I wrote no politics. We weren't going to talk politics. We just wanted you to join in on the debate and also the process of making the documentary and what you think after watching it. You know, like you, like
right.
If you were calling Horace Grant up, you'd probably say similar stuff, right?
Yeah, no politics, Horace, your thoughts on...
Exactly. And, you know, they were nice enough to respond, and it wasn't a form letter, obviously, because they mentioned The Last Dance, and that's not that big of a deal. It would have been a much bigger deal if I'd gotten them.
Well, I think it's still pretty impressive. The former president responded to your interview request. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Did you mention me?
If he actually typed out the letter, that I'd be impressed by. But anyway, it was nice to get a response that quickly. I just did this yesterday.
In the request, any Chris Black in the request?
No, never mentioned Black.
He said
I liked that
the
Abdallah,
Jesse Rogers show.
He mentioned that Abdallah character.
Well, I'm sure he loves it. I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised. Why not? Who doesn't? Jesse, you're the only one that dislikes Abdallah. So you and Cap.
Well, his personality. Come on.
It's not so much Abdallah, it's his character.
It's his personality. Right. It's
exactly.
Amazing.
Well, I'm kidding, of course. I love it.
Yes, we are. But that's fantastic that they actually responded. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that quickly.
I did it yesterday, and it was yesterday morning, and they responded last night. So at least they looked at it quickly.
I wasn't saying it as a bit. Like I have been told coming up through the business that you were the absolute best booker in the business back in the 90s.
Well, I put my heart into it, and it was much easier back then. I will say that. I mean, it was basically my only job for the show was to get the guests on, and so it was easier. There were less people competing. Let's start with that. But the other thing I did that you know is important is I went and got to know the players. You, as a producer, you really need to go do that, and that's why to this day I still text with Steve Kerr. I know him well, and my highlight of my career was actually booking Michael Jordan twice. I got him on twice to come on sports radio. I don't remember how I did it the second time, but the first time I went up to him at a restaurant while he was eating dinner with his wife, and I got him to come on a couple days later. So I was nervous as all hell, but I got it done.
Were you in awe of him, or because you were around the team, you kind of knew what to expect?
No, I mean, in that moment, I was a little intimidated. I was like 23, 24, and I go up to him while he's having dinner with his wife, which is like the biggest no-no. But he knew who I was, so it wasn't like I was coming out. He knew who I was. Other than that, other than that moment, I wasn't really in awe. I mean, just of his play, obviously. But, you know, when you're around him, we were on the road with the team a lot. I was at the Plaza Hotel where the team was staying in New York the night he went to Atlantic City. I wish I had seen him when he came back. I probably would have asked him, how much did you win? I wouldn't have thought twice about it. I actually gambled a little bit with him on a casino boat here in Chicago playing blackjack. So I was around the team a lot. And, you know, he was and I wrote this for ESPN.com. I know we're running out of time. I wrote this for ESPN.com a couple weeks ago, and he mentioned it. But he mentioned it this past week. I wrote about it a week ago, and he said it. He didn't have an entourage. He didn't have a posse. That's why his driver, George Kohler, his dad, and those security guards were it. He didn't have a lot of hangers-on or anything like that. He mentioned it this past week. My entourage was those security guards. That shaped him as well as a competitor. He was almost a loner in a lot of ways, and I think – you know, that fueled him in practice and games and being a Bull. Just when he went at it, you know, because that's all he had. That's all he had. I think that shaped him in a lot of ways. He didn't. You could tell with Horace Grant, all these other interviews, he didn't have a lot of close friends on the team, like close friends.
And doesn't that go along with? Doesn't it make it easier to then go after these guys to try and get the most out of them if you don't really care personally if they like you or not?
Yes, absolutely. And that dynamic also allowed people like myself and other media people to get close to him. As big as he was, you know, you could go up to him and talk to him and try to get him on the radio. It just you had to find the time to do it. Like he was so inundated. But it wasn't like he was distant or anything. He wasn't all, you know, just running out with his teammates or his entourage to go out, you know, all night and stuff. It was basketball and that singular focus, and you're right, that created this monster that people portrayed him as. But I think we all loved him as a competitive guy.
Coming up, let's talk some NFL football on a list of the worst to the best off seasons. Where do the Bears rank? We'll talk about it in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.